What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and our special guest today is the founder and CEO of Unicus Research, Lax Ganapathy. She is with us to talk about what to expect in 2026 based on the look ahead that Unicus Research just put out a few days ago. Lax, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. And how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, Ajay. Thanks for having me again.
It is my pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have you here. And I always learn so much when I talk with you. And I wanted to tailor this interview around your 2026 look ahead that you just put out and you were nice enough to share with me. Showing right here, this was dated December 30th. And I've had a couple of days to read over this, and there's some pretty interesting themes that you see playing out in 2026. And let's just go right from the top. You led with the TLDR, which was very polite of you. 2026 reality check. The best short opportunities would be in consumer and credit-sensitive sectors, commercial real estate, auto dealers, OEMs, banks with CRE and auto exposure, private credit-funded public firms, travel and hospitality sectors, lenders with ABS and ABL exposure, with a focus on collateral or lack thereof. Interesting note there, along with restaurants and consumer-centric businesses. So I'm seeing a couple of themes here, right? Some of this stuff is nothing too new. CRE, that's been out there for a while.
Yeah.
But you're also drawing a lot of attention to the health of the consumer here. And I couldn't help but notice the thing about collateral there. So what are you seeing in markets? What are you seeing in the data that makes you zero in on these topics for 2026?
Well, it's interesting because it's not about what we are seeing. It's about what we are not seeing. It concerns us, especially after the demise of Tricolor and First Brands. And those are backed, so First Brands backed by a private credit. And Tricolor and First Brands is quietly scaring all the investors, or it should. And if one of them, have collateral double pledged, the chances are others are too. And no one knows about it, and no one will ever know about it until either the bank takes action to do the auditing, like JP Morgan did, or the auditors need to initiate a request saying that, hey, we wanted to audit this pool of loans. So what we are not seeing is what's concerning us. And that is leading us to deduce that 2026, we will still drag the First Brands and Tricolor incidents because the investors haven't gotten their money back, or creditors haven't gotten their money back. And we are expecting more of First Brands, Tricolor kind of incidences in 2026.
So First Brands and Tricolor, obviously the double pledge collateral stories there, the big blow ups in the credit markets, two notable auto sector, one was parts, the other was used cars. Had an article this morning talking about how auto sales are expected to decline again in 2026.
Yes.
Something like 15.8 million new car sales they're predicting this year. So a lot of energy around the automotive sector. Do you see the private credit risk as particularly concentrated in the auto sector, or was that just kind of the first of many for whatever reason that was exposed?
Private credit is not that omnipresent, so to speak, in auto sector or consumer credit yet. What they are doing is they are pivoting, what we are seeing is they are pivoting from BDCs into consumer credit, into auto sector. So that is concerning us. Banks, they are trying to take market share away from banks. And it's not that big of a deal yet, but it concerns us because once it shifts to private credit, once private credit gets involved, there is no transparency. There is no filing. There is no tracking like we are doing with the SEC in ABS. There is no tracking how the loan is performing unless it's too late. So that's what's concerning us. And no, private credit is not that much involved yet in terms of market share. in terms of for auto lending.
Now, it's interesting you should mention that private credit taking market share from the banks, because the banks seem happy to oblige them. Because as the banks are losing market share in some of these sectors that are typically risky and have more stringent capital requirements associated with lending into them, yes, the banks are losing that business to the private credit firms. But where are the private credit firms getting the capital that they're lending into those sectors?
The banks,
The same banks, right?
the
So
same
are the
banks.
banks really losing any market share, or are they just making the same loans with lower capital requirements using a middleman to take all the risk?
Exactly. And they have been doing it for quite a while. And it just moves the risk from banks' balance sheet onto the balance sheet that nobody can see, which is private credit.
And
It's
ultimately, if the losses get big enough, that private credit risk could eventually bleed into banks if it gets big enough, as the banks are holding the notes on the loans to those private credit firms. So really, it's just a shell game moving the risk around. At the end of the day, it hasn't been eliminated. It's just somewhere we can't see it.
It, the risk has been tra it's is being transferred to invisibility. You don't know where the risk is. You don't know who's holding the risk. Private credit in terms bundles everything up and it goes into the ABS market. You don't know where it is. You don't know how to track it. So that's what concerns us, and that should concern every single investor. And I shared with you something where private credit managers were interviewed by one of the reporters, and some of them said, well, you know, it shouldn't, citing First Brand's incident, default should not scare any investors, or they shouldn't make a big deal about it because it's private credit, it's not AAA. So I don't know what they are surprised about. What this tells us is that private credit managers are normalizing bad underwriting. Tricolor could have been avoided if JP Morgan, you know, did some due diligence. First Brands could have been avoided if they did a proper auditing. So red flags have been there, but nobody cared and they underwrote anyways. And now they are normalizing this process, especially in private credit where no one can see what's in there. And this is not institutional money alone, Jack. And I'm concerned because institutional investors, you know, they make a lot of money, they lose some money. They are aware of the risks, aware of where they're investing. What concerns me is that individual investors, they are 401k. So private credit is infiltrating into all of them. And they are not aware. They are not aware what private credit is. I think one of the articles that I wrote where this guy is like, I don't want it to invest in private credit. It doesn't come out as private credit per se. If I can pull it up right here. So it doesn't say private credit fund in the 401k investment. It's, I think it's embedded into managed accounts. It's embedded into target dated funds.
High
It's
yield
in
ETFs,
yeah.
absolutely. Many different mechanisms they use.
Yes. So, you know, you have the, you know, I'm happy to share this link with you and I discuss which firms are pushing this into individual investors 401k, State Street Cap Global Advisors, Apollo, Great Gray, and BlackRock, and Goldman Sachs. So everybody has some kind of ETFs that has private credit or private asset investments in it, and they are plugging it in. And one of them is VanEck BDC Income ETF. I think that lost more than 5% or
Wow.
6% last year.
And folks, if that's one theme I saw in 2025 that I expect to continue into 2026, it's that 401ks and IRAs are going to be used as a dumping ground in order to socialize losses associated with Wall Street's lack of due diligence. And you know, look at this quote here that I have highlighted on this tweet that you flagged based on this interview with these were private credit fund managers, I think. defaults aren't a scandal. They're the expected reality of underwriting risk, and the market forgot that. Almost as if to suggest you deserve these losses, right? Like, I just lost a whole bunch of your money because I didn't bother to check who I was lending it to, and it's your fault because you forgot to expect losses. That's pretty brazen to be talking like that. Not really indicative of somebody who, say, learned his lesson and is promising to do better next time. That's it.
Well, private credit is, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's going rogue, but they are everywhere. And, you know, if anyone is suggesting you to, hey, invest in this particular ETF, you know, it will provide return. Make sure you read the fine prints and see what's in the ETF and what are you investing in, just in, instead of trusting the person who's suggesting you to invest in that particular ETF.
And I advocate that often on my channel, and it's not so easily done either, because, you know, it's real easy to hide this stuff. The prospectus doesn't always list everything. And it shouldn't be that hard to make sure your retirement isn't being dumped into this kind of stuff. But unfortunately, it is. I want to zero in on another theme that you mentioned from your look ahead for 2026. And you described this as the core story of 2026, the expansion of the lower K. We'll get into the shape of the K in a second here. You include this quote from the Chipotle Mexican Grill third quarter conference call from their CEO. A particularly challenged cohort is the 25 to 35 year old age group. We believe this trend is not unique to Chipotle and is occurring across all restaurants and many discretionary categories. This group is facing several headwinds, including unemployment, increased student loan repayment, and slower real wage growth. We tend to skew younger and slightly over-indexed to this group relative to the broader restaurant industry. So this was Chipotle Mexican Grill CEO trying to explain the dreadful quarter that they posted. And it basically saying, hey, the young demographics, young professionals, recent college graduates are really struggling here. And that's why our quarter was so bad. And when you say the expansion of the lower K, I also wanted to elaborate a little bit. You know, this chart here from Business Insider kind of shows what's meant by the K-shaped economy, where, you know, you have some event. In this case, it would be, say, the vid, the big, you know, the germ that we all caught. And you had one segment of the economy did really well, the wealthier segments, some parts of the economy recovering, but the other parts headed lower. And you're anticipating that this lower K, the purple line here, is going to get bigger this year. More people will join that lower K. What do you see as driving this? Is this just a continuation of the affordability crisis, or is there something getting worse here?
Well, it's constantly has been percolating since for a long period of time. And we have to keep in mind that we are entering into a stagflationary economic environment, and it's not good for the end consumers. Okay, so nobody wants to say the bad S word. The stagflation is frowned upon. But at some point in time, we have to address the reality. We also have to factor, before responding, I wanted to set up a stage and address why we think the lower K will expand and continue to expand in 2026. We also have to remember, as we kick off 2026, we will have the One Big Beautiful Bill Act kicking in. Some aspect of the bill will be enforced in January, and some part of the bill is expected to be enforced somewhere in June. And One Big Beautiful Bill Act is one of the benefits it cites is during the tax refund period, which is in the next, in the first, second quarter, which will be roughly up to 1,000 per individual.
So that's they are expecting returns to be up to $1,000 bigger for individuals. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes. But what we have to think about and what everybody forgets is we are entering 2026 with $38 trillion in debt. That represents 120% of our GDP. Wow. A year ago, that total gross national debt is 2.23 trillion higher. 5 years ago, it was 11 trillion higher. So at this rate of daily growth over the past 3 years, if it were to continue, the U.S. will reach roughly estimated 39 trillion by March 2026. Now,
3 months.
As of third, fourth quarter, household debt includes roughly $1.65 trillion in student debt, $1.66 trillion in auto debt, and $1.23 trillion in credit card debt. So with the consumer debt around $19 trillion, give or take. So the reason this is a problem for, and the reason this is going to, in a long term, expand the lower K is because the rising debt will reduce the GDP in longer term. And growing national debt will impact on GDP, reduces the per person income. And it will also reduce the number of jobs that is available. And in at the end, it will all impact the investment. So we don't have a clear data of BNPL. We are in a place where it looks like nobody cares about the debt, but the debt will have a long-term consequences. So when you ask me, oh, when this is happening, since when this lower K is going to expand, it's been happening for a long, long time. And everybody was happy, and Twitter is full of happy people saying, oh, GDP is 4.3%. That is an incorrect and misrepresented number. First of all, it's a delayed report. Second of all, companies did a ton of imports early in the year to avoid new tariffs. That inflated the earlier quarter, especially third quarter. So then third quarter showed lower imports and higher exports as a swing. So that pretty much made GDP look better than it is. And if you look at it, the spending, the majority of the GDP spending was focused on either healthcare or government spending. So those considered as consumption. It's not like the country is having a real growth in the GDP. It's just a very, very misplaced and miscoded number. So what we are thinking is that, yes, the $1,000 might boost the consumers a little bit, but as we go into the second quarter and third quarter, the people who are making 100,000, 200,000 will cascade down into the lower K, and the people who are making 75,000 cascade down to people who are making 50,000. If you factor inflation in, this is going to consistently expand the lower K. I'm sorry, yeah. I've been going nonstop, but I thought saying this, it's a critical in understanding what I'm trying to convey.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with what you're saying there. I do think the lower K will be expanding. And I do think you're going to see, you know, like we saw in this article I was reading this morning on my live stream about the auto sector, that a lot of new car buyers are not just trading down to a new subcompact car or buying cheaper cars. They're leaving the new car market entirely. They're into used, or they're just keeping their older car on the road longer. And yeah. So, and this is in the cohort of 75 to 150,000 bracket. You know, people with make a good living are being driven down into that lower K. I was going to say on the GDP in commentary you had there, it was pretty interesting. Yes, the number looked good, the absolute number, the 4.3% GDP growth. But you correctly pointed out, we're running, what, $2.7 trillion deficits, right? That is borrowed money that is inflating the GDP numbers. And let's be honest, the government, whether through inflation or outright default, the government intends to default on that debt one way or another. You've got buy now, pay later, driving consumption higher. I suspect a large number of people who are using buy now, pay later debt to consume have no intention of ever paying that back.
No.
And you've got the data center build out. that has been driving a lot of economic growth. And I think within that space, you've got a lot of people borrowing money they have no intention of ever paying back. And so, you know, we're a debt-based, credit-based economy here, and we're championing these growth numbers, but these growth numbers are, it's all borrowed money that we're never going to see again, which I do think leads into the stagflationary situation that you described, where it's inevitably going to result in higher unemployment and higher inflation.
It's a scary reality to live in. And one of our sources that we constantly speak to corrects us every time we have a call, said, you don't understand. Most people think on a weekly basis, can I get by this week? Do I have enough money this week? Can I get by this month? Do I have enough money to get by this month? They don't think more than a month at a time. So the entire economy is consumption-based, and they are based on what can you have it right now. If you can pay in four equal installments, they don't look at it as the amount that's going to go out of their wallet in like next month. They look at it, hey, it's like $1,000 XYZ item. I can only pay $30 today, so I'm good to go. So, and that is, that problem has been a snowballing for a long period of time. And we are at a stage where it can no longer snowball.
And I have to say, the buy now, pay later lenders are sticking by their 2.4, 2.5% delinquency rates that just do not pass the sniff test, not when delinquency rates are higher in virtually every other debt category, except for mortgages, pretty much. Every other debt category, delinquency rates are higher. And these are categories where the consequences of delinquency are higher and more severe than they are for buy now, pay later. And I think there's a reckoning in that BNPL space that's coming. I don't know when, I don't know what's going to trigger it, but the data that they are presenting to the public right now just seems too good to be true.
No, it's not real. We have been working on that aspect, because you have Affirm, you have Klarna. You have to consider that these buy now pay laters are being funded by private credits. So some of the delinquencies and defaults, based on the agreement that they sign with the corresponding private credit firm that they are taking the money from, some risks can be transferred back to the private credit. And some risk will lie with the Affirm or Klarna. So we are still working on that, but it looks like, hey, you know, if it is too much in your balance sheet, just kick it off to me, where no one can see it, and wash it back and send it again. So, and that's what's concerning us, because it's a Schrodinger's economy. It's just, the economy is great until like anybody opens the box. And, you know, what is going to trigger that is what we have been scrambling our heads every day.
Yeah. And if any of you guys are out there that are poker players, go watch Affirm CEO Max Levkin give any interview where he talks about delinquencies, and watch his body language as he's talking about delinquencies, and tell me you wouldn't put him all in on that bet if you were sitting across from a poker table, because that guy is just, he strikes me as a terrible, terrible liar. All right. I also want to elaborate a little bit on something else you put in. You had a lot to say about commercial real estate and your 2026 look ahead. And, a lot of familiar themes from 2025 that, to be honest with you, I'm pretty surprised these themes didn't blow up last year. For all intents and purposes, they should have. And you're saying, as in prior years, extend and pretend has been a key theme for the U.S. commercial real estate market in 2025. We expect it to continue into 26 as the CRE market faces a massive maturity wall. Lenders have been extending CRE loans and auto loans and are about to mature, helping borrowers avoid a big interest rate shock and giving lenders time for interest rates to fall. The strategy appears to be working for banks based on delinquency ratios, but we expect banks both in CRE and autos to continue extending and pretending in 2026. So before I get too deep into this, let's stop there. The maturity wall in 2026, I've been hearing that for a couple of years, and the extend and pretend, which they've been doing for several years now. Will they be able to just continue this throughout this year, or is there some limit to how much of this they can do?
Sure, they can continue it for to 2026 because unless there is a major red flag that triggers a bank to do the audit or to just close out their loan, they will continue doing it, Jack. And that's a no-brainer for them because as long as they can extend it and modify the loan, we go to asset-backed securities data, we analyze them every day, and the number of modifications in auto loans continues to increase. As I mentioned earlier, if you are a borrower and you got laid off and you have savings and you can pay only $100 a month, you can go to the bank and the bank can modify the loans in such a way that the monthly payment can be $100 a month.
On an asset that depreciates faster than $100 a month.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Wow.
The people are buying assets that depreciating and paying a 900 month loan on an auto, on an asset that's depreciating. And people are taking hundreds and thousands of student loan on a degree that would never get them a job while unemployment is increasing. 2026 is not going to be pretty, and the expansion of the lower K should trouble the people who are on the upper K.
Now, when I hear commercial real estate, I automatically go to office, but I often forget that it's a much bigger category. Commercial real estate also includes commercial. If the lower K expands, I'd expect commercial real estate, retail locations, continue to suffer, right? Malls continue to go out of business. Absolutely. It also includes multifamily residential. And as the lower K expands, you'd expect more people to miss rent payments, more evictions. So commercial real estate isn't just an office thing now. Virtually every category within the commercial real estate space is at risk here, isn't it?
Very. And it explains why I can take a random shot and say that almost all the banks are colluding with each other and trying to make it in such a way everything is extending and everything is fine. Because if one person start to mark to market, and everybody will be exposed and everything will be like house of cards collapse overnight. But they are all colluding together and extending, and they will continue to do so.
And, you know, I tell you, you can only avoid price discovery for so long, right? Everybody's looking at the silver market right now. Yeah. And you see what happens when you push off price discovery for so long. When it finally does happen, it becomes violent. And that's what we've seen in silver markets. And I see so many sectors. Private equity is doing it. Commercial real estate is doing it. I'll get into some of the other categories I want to talk about if I keep my list going here. But I want to read on a little bit more. According to S&P Global Market Intelligence, banks accounted for nearly 60% of the originated CRE mortgages maturing in 2025 per our newly built classification model. Still, that ratio was projected to decline for the next 5 years as banks have been dialing back their exposure. Private credit has been playing a bigger role in the CRE market, taking market share from traditional lenders. Still, banks have also partnered with private credit firms to invest in CRE, which can be seen in the substantial increase in lending to non-depository financial institutions. So that's another instance there, isn't it, of the banks are losing market share, but they're not really losing market share, are they? They're just lending to the middleman.
They are transferring the risk. So where everybody like us can see and question, to a place where no one can see. And if you can't see anything, then you don't know what's happening unless it's too late.
So where are these private credit, these non-depository financial institutions, NDFIs, the shadow banks, what are they going to do with all that commercial real estate? Are they going to sit on it and wait for it to go bad?
No idea.
Are they gonna park it somewhere else?
That they might park it in their asset-backed securities, and we are trying to get access into a platform that tracks the ABS for private credit and for the private companies that are now public. We have to bite the bullet and subscribe to it, because that will help us to analyze the data to see how the loans are performing, whether they are modifying loans over there, or whether they are extending it, or whether it's deteriorating. So we are working towards exploring that data bank.
Looking forward to seeing what you find in that category. I'm sure plenty of cockroaches lying in that area.
A lot of them.
All right. Now, you've got another little segment in your look ahead, and this one got me excited because this is near and dear to my heart, the AI data center implosion you're calling for in 2026. So we expect the implosion of the data center narrative as we venture into 2026. AI data centers face significant hurdles with power availability and infrastructure, leading to delays, higher costs, and potential grid instability. And I tell you, it was just last night, I saw my friend Just Dario posted that CoreWeave very quietly on Friday published an 8K where they have revised, extended and pretended a lot of the covenants in one of their debt facilities to push out maturities, to reduce liquidity thresholds that trigger their default provisions, to delay some of the debt service coverage ratio triggers of their default covenants, all things indicative of liquidity problems brewing in the data center space. We've seen a lot of project delays in data centers from CoreWeave and Oracle. So we're already seeing some really early, emphasis early, signs there.
Yeah.
What do you see as triggering something like this? Is it just the power costs, or do you see some...
It's a cost of power, and you build something. It's not like a mall. You build something, you build, they come. It's just you build something in the two big data centers, and you don't have any power to run them. Who does that? The 101, you have to figure out whether you have sufficient infrastructure to begin a project in the first place that you can run. And you just built the entire data center, and now it's sitting idle, and it's expected to sit idle for 2 years.
Now that's interesting. When a data center is built and sits idle for 2 years, because the real value in a data center, it's just a steel building. Maybe you got a power plant attached, but it's a steel building full of GPUs and other networking equipment, rapidly depreciating.
Yes.
Networking equipment, rapidly becoming obsolete. So these data centers, if they sit for 2 years before they get hooked up to the power grid, that value, the entire math behind that investment has just gone up in smoke utterly, hasn't it, with those 2 years of lost revenue?
Absolutely. And before I go, how it's impact consumers, Paul, electricity bill is going through the roof. And we've been talking about the grid instability for 6 years now, because with EVs, you need grid stability. The grid infrastructure in the United States is very, very, very antique. You need an upgraded one. So it's so surprising that you don't fix the infrastructure first and then start the project. You start the project and then you worry because there is no power and no infrastructure.
And power infrastructure does not move quickly, right? You can call yourself a hyperscaler. You can do your tech bro, put that stupid thing on your head like you do at a TED talk and make all these promises about the vision and how fast you're going to build. The power grid doesn't care. It just doesn't care. Good intentions don't pump electrons.
Thank you. And it's been going on since way before 2015. I can't find the exact date. But if we had started working on building out and upgrading our infrastructure that we very much need for the advancement in innovation and everything, we should have started 10 years ago. We would have had something by now. And now we have data centers, and it's going to be like another ghost project that would never get, never worked on. And somebody asked me, oh, are you recommending NVIDIA as a short? I said, we are not touching that as a short. And they asked me why. I said, I haven't looked at NVIDIA, but I can see something. They are selling shovels, quote unquote, chips to all these data centers. You know, I'm not an engineer, but won't the chips will be a little outdated by the time they have the power to run the entire data center?
So let me do my disclosures real quick. Since you mentioned NVIDIA, I have to disclose I am personally short NVIDIA, and I cannot wait for the day I no longer hear this picks and shovels talking point. It is so tired and worn out. You know, okay, maybe there is a gold rush going on, and maybe NVIDIA is selling the picks and shovels. Let me ask you, has anybody found any gold yet?
No.
No. So how long are you going to keep selling those picks and shovels for if nobody... Everybody who bought one went digging and found no gold. You're not going to keep selling picks and shovels. So that's my short.
No, I completely agree. And to counterpoint, we don't recommend, we don't trade on our recommendations. We don't trade, period, due to compliance. But we stay away from stocks like NVIDIA or Carvana because, yes, it could be a great shot, but when is the top? You know, we don't know how long they can sell the shovel is a good point, but I don't know when.
That is the risk, right? I mean, I am standing in front of the most raging bull run in history and betting it's going to stop. So that is not a trade I took lightly. You teased a little bit when we were talking beforehand. You have a report coming out in the days ahead. What can you tell us about that report you guys have coming out without giving away the beans? I understand, but it's in this space, isn't it?
Yes. And they are sitting on their hands and they don't have the power necessary to run the data center that they built. And they are very, very happy in, you know, offering dividends that they can't give.
So you have a dividend-paying data center firm that has built a data center that they can't turn on because they don't have power. Okay. And when is that one expected? When will you be putting that report out?
End of this month.
End of this month.
We have reached out to a couple of engineers who at least used to work or aware of things going on. So we haven't heard back from them and... Let's see what they have to say.
Yeah. Well, I guess you worry about, you know, can you turn the thing on before you build it? Seems like a rational thought process to me, but I am not an AI bro, so I couldn't tell you there. One other category here, something that I think is an important detail. Maybe we could just talk about this one briefly. You also mentioned data throttling, and this has been something that I have been worried about for years. I have seen this creep of politics into the economic data, not just under this administration. I saw it under the last one too, but I do see it getting worse. You're saying we are not China or Russia. There is no indication, at least officially, that macro data is systematically suppressed. However, we've been skeptical for a while about the quality of the macro data we've been receiving. The latest government shutdown has validated our skepticism. We expect frequent data delays from the BLS and other government agencies in 2026. I mean, this is some... We're not quite Banana Republic yet, but we're getting there, aren't we, with some of the things that have been done to the data recently?
Well, Jack, I was trying to be politically correct when I was writing it to our clients and everyone, but I think we are there. Good conscience say that the data we are receiving is kosher. So what we do, if they say the unemployment is 4.1, we check the U.S. U6 unemployment, and that would be close to 8 or 9. And then we add at least 2 points more to say, okay, that's the reality. So that's the best we could do, but it's not like, hey, this is the data that the government has released, and the data is accurate. Let me model my analysis and projections based on that. We do not rely on that because it is.
I could tell you, these job reports, and we get another one on Friday this week, assuming it's on time. I tell you that the truth is hiding in those job reports. It's just nobody ever talks about it. Like, if you actually open the attachments and you look at the household numbers, the full-time, the part-time, the multiple job holders, you can see what is happening in the labor market in that data. The problem is that never makes the headline. That never makes it to the press. Only the headline jobs added, which always gets massively downwardly revised months later, and the headline U2, I think, is the unemployment rate that they trumpet. And you're right,
No,
U6
you
is
too.
a much better measure.
I think U3 is the one we track.
Is U3, is that the headline? It's one of the U's.
Yeah,
But
U3 is the headline. U6 is the one that's hidden, and it's been for a while a headline-driven economy.
yeah. And
Yeah.
in this last jobs report, which they're out saying, oh, look, 65,000 jobs were added in November. Never mind the fact that more than 100,000 were lost in October, which was released on the same day. So it was actually a big net loss in unemployment in those two combined reports. Didn't see any of that mentioned in the chest bumping celebrations, but a big spike in U6 unemployment in that last non-farm payrolls from, I think we went from 8.0 to 8.7.
And
And
it's going to go up to 9 point something. And then you add another 2 points to that U6 number. That is something as close to reality as you can get. So we are in a very, we think that when the GDP number gets revised down, and when it, so from 4.3 to maybe 2 point something, then we have a reality, then we have some economic numbers coming in. In all logical reason, Jay Powell would hold the interest rate. And if he still cuts the interest rate this January, then he's going to cut the rate in a situation where he's not supposed to cut.
And I tell you, that's another thing that has really concerned me is, there was a lot of talk about the Fed and how they were torn, and you had three dissensions. And oh, this was the most divided Fed we've ever seen with this rate cut that they just passed in the last month. That, in my opinion, is just such a BS talking point. That was one of the most dovish FOMCs that I have ever seen. They cut rates into high inflation and they started QE up again. They, what did they call it? Reserve purchase something or systemic reserve purchases. You're printing money and pumping it into the economy. And that was unanimously decided on by the Fed. It's like they just decided we're going to have a couple of people vote no on the rate cut just so it can look like we're standing up to Mr. Orange and maintaining Fed independence. And then here is the most dovish policy outcome we've seen since 2021. And we're calling it hawkish somehow. I was really amazed
You know
by
what?
the media reaction and how dovish that FOMC meeting really was.
You know what's, I agree with you. You know what else scares me is that we are entering a period where it's so similar about this rally, how the Fed reacting before 2007, 2008, before 2000, 1999, 2000, and all of this. And at the end of the day, big banks get bailed out. Tech guys get bailed out. The end consumers are broke. The end consumers lose all their money, the retirement money that's in 401k, that's in private credit. They are the one lose everything. And the circus goes on. It happens all over again. So this time, what's concerning, and this is going to persist not only in 2026 into 2027. This is not an organic bull market, and the data is all over the place. No one knows the reality of the economy because the data is not echoing the reality. So It's a very interesting period we are entering, Jack.
And another thing that really concerns me, talking about the data and the inaccuracy, is the imputation in the CPI math. And imputation is just BLS speak for we made it up. We couldn't go measure, for whatever reason, we couldn't go measure in prices. So we took some other data points, came up with some arbitrary formula, and we imputed, just made up a number, and we inserted that. And I think it's something close to 40% of the data points in CPI are now being imputed.
Just 40%?
Yeah, well, don't forget there's also your hedonic adjustments. Those are also happening. Oh, that's an improvement. And so it doesn't count as a price increase, even though the pre-improvement model is no longer available. So if you don't want to pay for the improvement, you don't have the choice, but it's still not inflation. See also, you know, all the bells and whistles they shove into new cars now, and yet there are no base models available at a cheaper price.
No, it's $50,000. Like new car is $50,000.
And that's the average. Half of them are more than that. So,
yeah. I mean, 5 years is pre-2020, if you have $50,000 to splurge, you can get a nice Porsche.
Yeah, and that's why more people are being pushed into that lower K. They're driving old cars. They're keeping their old car on the road, or they're buying used instead of new. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before that works its way into asset prices.
The more money they are going to print, the inflation will never go down. And they
that's like a campaign issue here. Affordability will be front and center in these midterm elections. We're already seeing, I mean, something phenomenal happened last week. Ron DeSantis and Bernie Sanders both came out opposing new data center construction on grounds of affordability. All right. I mean, what kind of political bastard child would those two produce? Ron DeSantis, ultra conservative, and Bernie Sanders, who is, you know, just a step above Stalin on the economic spectrum. Those two in the same camp opposing data centers on grounds of affordability. You can see the price of electricity and the cost of living will be a campaign issue. And it was in these, you know, off-season elections last year, and the Republicans got their clock cleaned on that topic. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
You have not only electricity, you have water. Water is an issue for data center. They are there is a news that there have been news that we are reading where they are taking farmlands away for the data centers. So you have the food, water, electricity, everything, and expecting the price to not go up.
Yep.
This is not affordable. You cannot afford to live. You cannot afford to live in a healthy way. You cannot afford to eat in a healthy way. You cannot afford to work. You cannot afford to do anything. The lower K is expanding and the lower K is angry. And that is a problem that sooner or later the upper K has to face.
And while we're on listing things getting more expensive, let's mention memory while we're at it. RAM is in most electronic devices that you can't even get anymore because Sam Altman bought it up. Micron exited the consumer RAM business because it's all going to data centers. So laptops, computers, personal electronic devices, the Chromebook my daughter uses for school, all that stuff going to get more expensive now.
Everything is expensive. I ordered something from Dell 6 months ago. It came back and it didn't have a fan. It broke down. I sent it back. I don't think they have enough parts, enough resources to give it to normal people like us because everything is going to data centers. My question is, what does a data center do?
That's a good point. Tell us to glue our pizzas together. I don't know. Make a fake AI slop Asian guy videos about silver news that never happened. Maybe we're just discounting the real value that these data centers are providing to the economy. Note sarcasm.
Carvana is 432. I know people who are short this. And every time I get a chance, I tell everyone, do not short it. But this is a fraud. No one cares. You cannot call a top. So you cannot short it. So market is extremely overvalued. We don't know when it's going to implode, but lower K is already seeing it. check. They cannot afford anything. So lower K is feeling the recession. For them, recession is already here.
The mainstream since 2022.
Media, what's that?
Since 2022, I think the average person has felt recession. 90% of the economy, that's true.
That is absolutely true.
So Lux, I've got your website up here, unicusresearch.com, which I highly recommend. Tell me, where else can we see your work?
You guys can see, log into contrarianunicus.substack.com. We are currently offering a discounted confidential insights memberships. You're welcome to sign up, or if you wanted to sign up and read everything that is available for free, you're welcome to do that as well. We do not provide short recommendations or research on our Substack. For that, you're welcome to send us an email, lux@unicusresearch.com.
All right. And I will put links to all of that stuff right down below in the description. Lux, thank you very much. I always appreciate your research and your time. Thank you for sharing your 2026 look ahead with me. I will give you the final word.
Just wanted to share to all the listeners that please be careful where you invest your money. Please do your own due diligence. And any questions you have, you're welcome to ask Jack or us. We are happy to guide you for a couple of minutes. We don't cater to individual investors, but we will be happy to share a couple of pointers, you know, whether it's risky to invest there or not. But please be aware of private credit. Know before you invest.
Yeah, I mean, and you could see it in that quote that you sent me where they're saying, oh, this is expected. The market forgot that. You know, it's your fault your money went up in smoke when you trusted me to lend it to somebody.
Yes.
Really amazing and stuff.
It's, I mean, you should put up the post because it is very arrogant tone. I don't care. It's not a AAA. You know it's not a AAA. Why are you investing?
Yeah, that's some top shelf gaslighting right there, isn't it?
That's the age we live in, Jack.
One more plug. I didn't mention Unicus Research on Twitter as well. I'm going to put a link down below to that. Highly recommend you follow Lux on Twitter as well. Thanks again, Lux, for taking the time to talk to us today and everybody else. Until next time, live small and dream big.